and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, PrecisionHydration.com, electrolytes in different strengths that match how you sweat, and Precision Fuel 30 gels and drink mixes to give you enough carbohydrate to perform at your best. You can get 15% off your first order with the code OXYGENADDICT15. We're also brought to you by athleticgreens.com/oxygenaddict. Athletic Greens Ultimate Daily is an all-in-one daily supplement with 75 vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and digestive enzymes. They're all whole food sourced ingredients. And listeners to the show can get a free year's supply of liquid vitamin D and 5 free travel packs. Just go to the link at athleticgreens.com/oxygenaddict. All right, guys, welcome to the show. I hope you're good. It has been a good week of racing. There's been all kinds of excitement going on around the world. And also, we've got a cracking interview for you. We've got an interview with Team Oxygen Addict member Tom Robertson, who won his age group at Ironman UK. Great interview with him. We really dive deep into what his training was like, what he's had to do in order to get himself to the point where he's the age group winner of, you know, arguably one of the biggest Ironman races, certainly in UK and in Europe as well. So it's really great to sit down and talk with someone who's performing at the very, very highest level. So we've got a great, nice, long interview for you later on with Tom. Great guy, really, really lovely, humble, doesn't understand, I don't think, quite the size of his achievement, but it's an interesting listen because it really goes into, you know, the nuts and bolts of what it actually takes, not just to qualify for Kona, but to actually win the age group, not just finish on the podium, but win it. And I think it'll surprise a lot of people actually when you hear the smart and intelligent way Tom took to approach his training. It's not about endless 30 hours a week. So tune in for our little secrets there later on. Okay, so racing that's been going on around the world. First up, WTCS racing this week over in Montreal. Change of format. I'm interested to know what you guys think about this. If you go to Twitter/OxygenAddict, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on this. I'm in two minds. I think on the first hand, I think the sort of short, fast, eliminated format is really exciting. I love Super League for that. I was really surprised when I heard that WTCS were going to have this in because it's so different to the usual style of sprint and Olympic distance racing that they have. And frankly, I think it's incredibly hard on the athletes' bodies. I think Super League's a slightly different thing. Super League has always had much more of an end of season party. Athletes are there. It's a very showmanship. And that there's an element of almost like the end of Tour de France, end of season criteriums to it. You can definitely tell that those guys who are racing are really racing each other. But everyone's aware that it's the end of the season. It's shorter, faster, harder racing. It is short runs, but they're very, very hard runs. And I'm just intrigued the effect that throwing a race like this into the middle of the WTCS season is going to have on athletes, especially just a week before the grand final in Edmonton. Essentially, some of those athletes have, if they've been through the repechage, have had to run flat out 2K four times in the period of a day. Now, that's very, very different to running a 10K. That flat out, very, very, very fast running is incredibly hard on the bodies. Already running 5K off the bike is hard on an elite athlete's body. But I'm just interested to see, I might be proved wrong here, but if there are any niggles that get shown up next weekend in the races with people who you might expect to perform really well and actually don't because they're carrying an unusual amount of soreness from the Montreal races. It was interesting, Maya Kingmer, who was leading the rankings at the time, chose not to race for that exact reason. She was quite vocal on her Instagram saying, I just don't think it's the right format for now in the year. And I think good on her. You know, it takes massive, massive commitment to your own principles to decide you're not going to do that when you're in the position of having led the standings at that time. So it all comes down to the races in Edmonton at the grand final this coming weekend. Results from this weekend. If you're not aware, it was a kind of eliminated format. 30 people started. First 20 over the line went into the next round. Then there was a repechage round where the last 20 raced each other and the top 10 then went into the next round. Those 20 raced, the last 10 were eliminated. So you ended up with the 10 fastest in the final. And it was good. It was great. It was interesting racing. But again, I'm not convinced it was what I was expecting from WTCS racing. Winners and podiums, though. On the men's side, it was a clean sweep for the French. We had Dorian Connex take the win from Vincent Lewis and then Louis Berger in third. On the women's side, again, a very comprehensive win for Flora Duffy. She just looked head and shoulders above everybody else there. Second place, running really, really strongly for second and third, Taylor Nibb and Taylor Spivey. Nibb pulled away to take the win, looking super, super strong. And Taylor Spivey sort of obviously has got a point to prove about not getting picked for the Olympics. She was running really well as well. So they take second and third. And we'll talk a bit more about Taylor Nibb and her performance later on as that's going to impact on the Collins Cup. So great to see there. Katie Zaviris had another good race in fourth. So her season's really had a turnaround. So that was cool. Ironman racing over in Ironman Finland. It was a female only pro race. First race in Finland. Course looked beautiful. Nice weather to start. Hideous rain to finish it in. Everyone on the podium looked freezing. Laura Philipp absolutely dominated. It was an 8:38 finish overall, which, you know, is an incredibly fast time in and of itself, but she closed with a 2:52 marathon, one of the fastest female marathons of all time. And remember, it was belting down and it was a hilly, a lot of it was sort of off-road on trails as well for the marathon. So astonishing run from her. She's really put herself back in the forefront of everyone's mind for Kona. Jocelyn McCauley took second. Imo Simmons took third. And then we had, for the men's side, the European champs were over in Germany, Ironman Germany, in Frankfurt. An amazingly close-fought race there. Patrick Nielsen, Christian Hogenhaug, and Dave McNamee. We had Hogenhaug off the front, off the bike. Nielsen and McNamee running side-by-side, closing him down. Nielsen came through to take the win, making the pass in the last few K. He closed with a 2:39 marathon to take the win in 7:59. He was only a handful of seconds, less than 30 seconds, off of Jan Frodeno's run course record. It was a stinking hot day again. It wasn't as hot as last year, but it was over 30 degrees on the run. So to go 7:59 on the Germany course on a day when it was extended by about 5K on the bike because of roadworks again, he's in incredible shape. That's a really, really strong performance. To close with a 2:39 in the heat, that's really put a warning shot across everyone's bows for Kona. Dave McNamee faded a little bit at the back end of his marathon. He held on for third, and I was reading Fraser Cartmell's write-up about this in his Facebook page. He was saying he booked Dave McNamee for the win here, running fast in hot conditions, but he really, really faded over the last 5K. He still ran a 2:42, if you can believe that. So despite McNamee saying, you know, I just need to know how far ahead of fourth I am, have I got this final Kona slot locked up? Everyone else thought he had it in for the win. So he's had a fantastic race. He's had a bit of a rough year, so it's great to see him have a really good performance and put himself back in contention. Hogenhaug held on for second. He himself ran a 2:48 marathon, so fast running from the three of them in 30 degrees heat in Germany. So great to see. Right, other bit of news that's come up since the last time we spoke. The captain's picks have been announced for the final couple of slots on the men's and women's sides for the Collins Cup races that will be taking place in Samarin on the 28th of August. Most interesting out of these picks, I think from my point of view, the USA have picked Taylor Nibb and Katie Zaviris to race here. Nibb had a cracking race at 70.3 Boulder, making her middle distance debut last weekend, then flew over to Europe and raced really well over this sort of super, super sprint distance. So she's really one to watch. And in Boulder, despite finishing second, she was on a road bike there as well. So God knows how fast she's going to go when she gets dialed in onto a TT bike position. Whether or not she'll have that in place for the Collins Cup, I don't know. But she's given away some watts there riding on the road bike. So Nibb and Zafirez being picked by the USA, really great. No Flora Duffy in Team International. She's obviously got loads on her plate, Olympic champion, wanting to close out the season winning the grand final in Edmonton as well. No Nicholas Spirig in Team Europe, which I'd personally hoped for. I thought that'd make a great one. But that does mean we get two more British athletes. Emma Pallant-Brown and Kat Matthews have both been picked. So the Team Europe team there on the women's side especially is just looks unbeatable. And sad news on the male side, Judge Goodwin misses out on a pick. I thought he was going to be a nailed on captain's pick after his performance over at Daytona, finishing third there and then winning the 70.3 European Championships. I thought he was nailed on, but captains have gone with Sebi Keenle and Daniel Backegaard. Now I read, I can't remember where I read this, whether it was Instagram, George was offered the reserve slot and turned it down, and he's going to focus on the 70.3 Worlds. I would not bet against George Goodwin for at least a podium and possibly a win at the World 70.3 Champions, because he's an incredibly talented athlete, and I would imagine he's now got a point to prove here as well. So good on you, George. Get yourself out to the Worlds, and I'll be rooting for you there. Other races upcoming this weekend, we have got the WTCS Grand Final. That's happening in Edmonton. So it's all to play for there. Maya Kingma didn't race this past weekend. So it's all the places could change on both the men's and the women's side. Flora Duffy will want to hold on to her lead. Maya Kingma will want to take it down. Be great to see that final race of the season there. Obviously, we've got a head-to-head battle between Christian Blumenfeld and Alex Yee to take the win on the men's side. Again, it'd be a cracking competition, so tune in to watch that. It's either 21st or 22nd of August, depending on what time zone you're in there. And Ironman Copenhagen taking place. So this is interesting. Lionel Sanders, obviously social media favourite and sometimes incredible athlete performer, sometimes utter car crash, depending on what kind of day he has. He hasn't qualified for Kona yet. He's going to, or reportedly going to race Ironman Copenhagen to try and get the slot there. He's also obviously down to race the Collins Cup, and it's getting bigged up against him, against Frodeno there at the Collins Cup. Can he race full on, flat out iron distance race and bounce back to race 6 days later over a 70.3 distance? He's done it before. It'll be interesting to watch. I'll tell you what, one thing, he definitely gives us value for money there, doesn't he? So tune in there to see how it goes for him this weekend. All right, before we go into this week's interview of the week, so I want to give you a shout out to our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. Now, you know, there's not one size fits all approach when it comes to hydration, because how much sodium each athlete loses is different. It can vary massively. It can be as little as 200 milligrams in a liter of sweat, or someone like me, up to 1500 milligrams in a liter of sweat. There are athletes who lose even more. To help you nail your hydration strategy for training and racing, the guys at Precision Hydration can provide a personalized recommendation for electrolytes and fuel that match how you sweat. If you struggle in the heat, or if you've had real problems with dehydration and cramping, you can't get to have an advanced sweat test in person, you can take the free online sweat test on their website and get a free personalized hydration strategy from them. And they're also aiming to do for fueling what they've done for hydration. So they've got a quick carb calculator, try saying that quickly, on their website. So you get a fueling recommendation for how many grams of carbs you're going to need for the length of distance you're racing and the size of athlete that you are. So they've got their new Precision Fuel 30 gels and Precision Fuel 30 drink mixes, each with 30 grams of carbs in. The fuel mix drinks have also got some of their pH electrolytes in as well. So loads of my athletes who've been trying it from Team Oxygen Addict have been raving about this, and especially the simplicity of the fact if you know exactly how many grams of carbs are going in per hour, per gel, per drink, without having to do any maths while you're on the road. So get over to precisionhydration.com and you can use the code OXYGENADDICT15 to get 15% off your first order of electrolytes that match how you sweat and the new Precision Fuel range. All right, links in the show notes there for the quick carb calculator, the free online sweat test, and you can book a 20-minute hydration and fueling strategy video consultation with one of their experts. I'll tell you what, if you book that, just mention that you've heard about it on our show. All right, guys, let's go over to this week's interview of the week with Tom Robertson, age group winner at Ironman UK. Okay, Tom, welcome onto the show. It's lovely to get the chance to have a chat to you face-to-face. And congratulations on the results at Ironman UK. I don't know whether it's quite sunk in yet, quite what you achieved there. How are you feeling about the whole thing?
Yeah, good. Oh, thanks, Rob. It's really good. You know, it did take a few days to sort of sink in, but I haven't really done any training for 3 weeks now, so managed to pack on 10 pounds in a couple of weeks, and probably about time to get back on the bike. But no, it was really good. It was I went in pretty relaxed, and which was a bit of a novelty, and just really chuffed that I could come out. And my aim was always just to justify the training I put into it, and so regardless of what happened on the day, and that sort of all panned out as well as I could have hoped for, really.
Brilliant stuff, man. Well, obviously, for people who don't know you, the result we're talking about, you got the age group win at Ironman UK in the male, I want to say 40, the male 40, male 35, yep. Male 40, I got 40, it right.
Yeah, just into that one.
So super competitive age group, the male 41, to even, you know, dream of getting anywhere near the top 10 is amazing. And then to take the win on the day, I think you probably don't realize quite how many people are sitting around going, oh, I want to listen to this guy's story and see how he got as fast as he did. So that probably doesn't sit well with you being the humble chap that you are, but you know, people want to hear the story. So in terms of experience on the race day, let's start with that. A few tales have been told already of how the weather changed mid-race. So I'm quite keen to capture all the drama of that happening. But talk us through race day and the run-up to it. How was your experience of getting to Bolton, firstly?
I felt like I needed a medal just for getting to the start line. But so many things went wrong going into the race. But the friend who I've done a lot of training with had to sadly pull the plug on it a couple of days before.
Oh, what a shame.
On my own. Which I think always takes away. It's always nice to sort of share these big weekends and things with people. So that was a bit of a shame. But no, it was a few other things went wrong. So the friend of a friend's place was staying in down in Manchester. The lock failed, so I had to get a locksmith out to get that changed. So my chilled out Saturday, sat with my feet up in a van waiting for the locksmith to turn up, and then. Bolton's not—it's not the easiest race logistically. I think having a few folk with you just to sort of pass the time, sat in traffic jams, and transferring bikes to T1, and then back into Bolton and the rest of it. So I think it definitely having a little team up there would have been good. But so I sort of got to Saturday night. It was the football Saturday night as well. So but I managed to sort of flop down and watch the football on Saturday night.
Of course,
night,
it was. And, yeah.
Got a good result there. So the sort of. Then
was that the Denmark match? Would that have been that night, England Denmark?
No, I think it was the Ukraine game, wasn't it?
It
was the 4-0.
Yeah,
it was. So that was cool. Just sort of, just chilling out and watching that, and then the next morning, I think I had planned to be into Bolton for about 3 a.m. or something like that to get the bus down to the swim. All the NCP car parks were meant to have been open, but sadly someone had forgot to hit the button on that one, and so there was a good few of us driving up to these NCP car parks, and the barriers weren't coming up, and so I was like, oh geez, sorry. So then drove around, parked up in a car park that was empty, and I thought, oh, this is great, this looks perfect. And I looked out, and there's a load of portaloos and stuff all lined up outside it, and benches. I thought, probably don't want to be parking here unless I want to be stuck until midnight with on the run course.
Yeah.
So buzzed out of that, and just parked up the van and just at the back street and legged it for the bus. And it's just like, oh, it's just not what you need. Basically, my warm-up was running half an hour across Bolton to get the bus down to the swim. And there was another lad we've been driving around Bolton and bumped into. I had a good chat to him and sort of chilled out on the half-hour trip down to the swim, though. So he's got down there in decent time at the end. But always, one of those things, I'm always mega cautious with my timings, and I was glad I built that fudge factor in of sort of half hour, 45 minutes or so that I needed. So,
That's a good tip for anyone doing it in future, isn't it? The idea of you feel like 4 a.m. is going to be early enough, and actually it wouldn't have been.
No, it would have been. I mean, it probably would, but I'm sort of a mega faffer in transition and stuff, and I just sort of rearrange my kit 100 times before I actually sort of head off down to the swim. So I kind of know that's sort of how I do things. So, Yeah, no, got down there. It was a nice enough morning. It was pretty warm. I think it was about sort of 15 degrees or so. So it was, you know, perfect sort of tri-suit weather and stuff. There was nothing, you know, I'd obviously been watching the forecast like a hawk for the few days before. And I had a Castelli Perfetto cycling top. I thought, you know, if it's proper heaving it down, I'll put that on because, yeah, there'll be a bit of aero cost, but actually, and you know, staying warm, I'm pretty rubbish in the cold. So
yeah,
but actually I sort of made the call the night before, so I'm not even going to put it in my T1 bag. I thought it's the weather's looking all right. I just don't want to waste the time with that. So which was, so maybe
it was your fault.
You
were the totem that tempted the rain gods over.
Yeah, probably. Exactly. But no, it was kind of just, I just sort of needed to be a bit decisive about it. And I love that tip that you mentioned the other day about Tim Don stuffing a bit of plastic down his front.
The bin bag
or something. Yeah. I'll definitely have to have a crack at that one, because I think that would have made a big difference, I think.
Yeah, I think for the really cold mornings, I've seen Tim do it down the front and the back actually. And obviously it takes a bit of maneuvering to get it down the back and probably three mates to help you with it. But seeing how slick it is when he runs out of T2 and just hand down the back and pulls it straight up and out again, really clever.
Yeah, and actually that's where I felt like I was losing most of the heat on the bike. When you're tucked in and coming down that the Chorley Road stretch on the bike, when it's quite fast, you know, the hills and stuff, yeah. I didn't feel like I was losing much heat in the wet, but it was that TT position. You could just feel the heat getting stripped out of your back sort of thing. So, yeah, definitely.
I think that's one of the challenges, isn't it? When you're really aerodynamic and you're really fast and you kind of, you know, especially the slight downhills like Chorley New Road where you're going fast for not much effort, you actually get really cold when it's raining, don't you?
Yeah. It was sort of begging for a hill to warm up again. Which gives a few of those when you get round into it. But
whoever thought someone would be saying that about the Bolton course?
Yeah. And then so I guess got all set up and everything pretty smooth, and it was really well done. You know, sort of massive kudos to the guys who set it up. And it was the whole with everything sort of COVID related and everything. It must have been, I can't imagine the amount of work that must have gone in with all the risk assessments and everything to get it done. So I thought that they did a really good job on that front. And it was even like giving you a mask to get to the swim start and things like that. Sort of it does make a difference, I think.
Definitely. And then in terms of the seeding and stuff for the start of the swim, where did you put yourself there? You're obviously a very strong swimmer. So were you one of the first ones off?
Yeah, I think I sort of sat myself in the sort of 55 group or something like that. I knew I've been swimming sort of sub 60 pace on my sort of long swims and stuff, so I was pretty happy with that. And I thought, you know, if a couple of guys go past me, that's no bad thing. Just sort of jump on a set of feet. But I was probably maybe 15th into the water, something like that. Maybe a few less, but it was really chilled. I haven't done a time trial, so I've done maybe one other time trial start like that before, and it's normally the old mass starts and where you get full gas for the first 200 and then try and settle in. But no, it's really super chill, just off and loads of clear water, and it was nice. And I know I always swim faster when I'm relaxed, and I had this sort of little mantra in my head which was strong and long, and always just, I know, I look at my stroke count against my times, and I just know when I'm swimming long, I'm swimming faster. And so I sort of had that in my mind, and that was the aim of the swim, was just not to redline. I mean, work it as hard as I could, but just don't redline it, and just keep it as long as possible. And so I sat on a set of feet for the first lap, which was really, really good, and just basically kept my head down. So that was really pretty uneventful. Then
in terms of that swim experience, with you being sort of so far into the water, high up the field, did you have much of a sense of what was going on around you? I suppose it's, in one way, it's nice, it's really chilled out, that you get a kind of, it's almost like a, you're going for a an open water swim on a Thursday evening kind of experience. But in another way, for a guy like you at the pointy end, I suppose it's hard to get a sense of where you are amongst the other people. Or did that just not enter your head?
You know what? It sounds well. I really, my sort of mindset going into it, the whole race, was I was pretty relaxed, and I really wasn't focusing on a position or anything like that. Really, I was sort of like, all I wanted to do was justify the training. You know, the training I put in. I sort of joined up with you guys back in September last year, and you know, and that's been the focus since then. So it's been a long time to really think about it and put that training in, and it was never really about winning the age group or whatever. It was just to justify the training and the sacrifices that I'd made and I'd imposed on the family as well along the way, and be able to come out and say, yeah, it was worth it. So so from that perspective, I wasn't too fast, as long as I felt like I was going well and I could, I guess I had a reasonable feel that I was swimming at a decent pace and wasn't drifting all over the shop like I do on occasion. I was pretty happy. And it was sort of on the basic sort of an out and back swim, really, with a sort of short bit across the top. So you could sort of look left as you're going. I could see there were guys, the lead age group kayak, I guess it was, you know, a couple of hundred meters up and things, but that didn't really enter my mind of like, oh, I need to bridge up to them or anything like that. It's just sort of run, swim your own race.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you got out of the water in about 63. What were your thoughts when you saw that? Was it just crack on? It seems like you're very relaxed about the whole thing. It's like, okay, it is what it is. And off we go. Yeah. That's a great approach.
I kind of knew I'd sort of swum how I wanted to swim, and it was a bit like I felt like I was swimming faster than that. And actually, you know, I think sort of looking back, maybe the course was a touch long or whatever. Mm. But actually, it didn't make too much difference. You
know, there weren't very many fast age group swim times. I know the pros seem to be, you know, the pros were under 50 for the lead guys, but the age groupers, there doesn't seem to be, it's hard to see because, of course, the Ironman website doesn't actually work when you try and filter by any of the swims. So I'm going through the PDF here, but there's not very many, if any, under 60-minute swims from the age groupers here at all that are standing out. You know, I'm looking at the winners of the other age groups and they're over the hour as well, which is really interesting.
I think the difference between the pro swim and the age group swim is the age group swim, the timing mapped was as you went under the banner coming down onto the jetty and then into the water and then up to the start where the pros had started, whereas I'm guessing the pro times were on the gun
from the gun
the start line, which was I don't know how far up into the course anyway, so there may
that's
be
that's interesting yeah that makes there. A big difference actually that'd be a good few minutes, won't it?
So it's that, I think that may have been, whereas I was surprised when I had a flip through, because normally you'd expect a good few age groupers swimming sort of, well, you know, mid-50s
totally.
Yeah.
Ah, there we go. Well, that explains quite a lot then, actually, because I was looking at it and thinking, huh, bizarrely slow swim, is it? But then the pro times don't line up with that. So, yeah, that totally explains it. Okay, so swim done, ticked off. You're happy, man. You're out and you're onto the bike course. What's your experience of heading out through T1?
I mean, it's always nice when it's a little bit quieter and in T1. It was a pretty small area they had, so I imagine that would have got pretty busy with the, you know, sort of when the bulk of the pack comes through. But loads of space, grab the bike, set off. Couple of guys absolutely flew past me in the first couple of k's, and I just knew that was, you know, I again just, you know, just had to do my own race and stick to the numbers that I had in mind. Just get comfortable, really start getting your nutrition on board from the off. And that's something that's been really good for this year being with you guys, is really sort of focusing on the, like, the detail. I think in the past I've just sort of said, yeah, I'll eat as much as I can and sort of quesera really. And probably under fueled as a result, whereas I've had a pretty clear plan in place as to exactly what I wanted to do. You know, I know I had double strength fluid up front that I wanted to get down in the first, that first sort of, I don't know how long it is back up to Bolton, 30K or so, something like that.
Yeah, it's about that, isn't it? Yeah.
So I sort of knew I wanted to get that tucked away in that stretch because I knew I was going to be down on the bars for the whole piece. So I didn't want to be popping up and eating or anything. So I thought, I'd just do fluid for that first bit and start getting the calories early on that. Pretty quiet. I think a couple of guys shot past me, like bullets, and but I was pretty happy. I was hitting the numbers I wanted to be hitting. It wasn't raining. I was happy at that point, and the temperature was nice at that point. Yeah, really, it was absolutely spot on.
I've heard that actually. It was a pretty pleasant first few hours.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of the second lap, it just smashed it down, and up until that point, all my numbers and sort of perceived effort and everything was lining up nicely. Was getting the fluid and getting the calories on board that I wanted to and stuff. So it was good, and all the spectators out on the hills was cool. I was surprised,
was there good support out there?
I was really surprised. I was thinking it was going to be a little bit quiet out there, but there was loads of folk out, and it was nice.
Yeah.
Having done sort of other big races, like doing Roth, when you're some of the crowds there and things like that, and it was cool. It's always good to have those sort of little moments in the course that you can then go, all right, this is a bit lonely and quiet, but you know, you've got this good, you're going to get a good shout, and there's going to be loads of people.
It's surprisingly well supported in places. I think that's the way I've heard it described. A lot of the local tri clubs have really embraced it, and you'll have, there's a section with a hill where City of Lancaster Triathlon go on, and a section where the Nuts for Tri Club go, and a section with the Oompa Loompas, and then those lunatics who wear the superhero outfits. It's got its own really unique sort of flavor, hasn't it? And really that's down to the communities who've embraced it much more than, almost like it takes a life of its own. It's not the organizers who've arranged that. It's the community who come by to support their athletes, which is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it was nice. Exactly that. All the different tri clubs and sort of their little corners and bits. And you sort of benchmark to each one and stuff. And sort of your mind, sort of drifts on these things. But and saw Matt Botchel as well, and that sort of shot me up a little bit. And I was like, oh shit, need to get aero.
Had you been to see him for a fit along the way?
Yeah. So I'd seen Matt. Luckily, I'd managed to squeeze in to see Matt. I think it was back end of last year, and then really tried to get into the aero drills and everything like that and really get comfortable in the position.
Like that made a big difference. You certainly rocked along with plenty of speed for not a huge amount of wasted power by the look of your power file, which is awesome.
I think that was great talking to Matt and getting that set up and getting, I mean, it changed it massively from where I was before and stuff. So,
yeah.
And the other thing that I've never been before is actually coming off bike and not being like, oh, just get me off this bike. I'm done with biking. And I was I was pretty chilly. So maybe that took my mind off it, but I was rarely are you super comfortable on a TT bike for 5 odd hours. So it's, that was really, well, certainly in my experience. So it was really nice to do those and not feel like, oh, geez, I just want to get off this bike now. So.
Yeah, that's nice. And what's your experience of the sort of the hilliness, the corners, the tough parts of the course? Because it's well, it's got a well-deserved reputation for being a super tough bike course, hasn't it?
I think it's the road surface that is basically the killer on it. It's I think if it was a super smooth road surface, I think it would be nowhere near the challenge it is, because there's so many corners you're coming into, and you just don't. I mean, I hadn't recce'd the course before, which I would have liked to have done, but just didn't have the window to do it. But so you don't want to go hard into a corner and suddenly find you're lining up to a massive pothole coming out of it. So obviously, as the laps went on, I think I felt like I spotted a couple of the sort of race enders and the places where you did need to be careful, and not least because you sort of ride past and someone's flipped their bike over a hedge into a field, and I'll probably slow down going through that bit next time. Yeah, it's the road surface that was really, and that, you know, just having to focus the whole time on that. But I didn't find that, I mean, the elevation and the course itself is great, especially that the hilly bit, or the bit out in the countryside is really nice. And actually, that was one of my things on the hills, was to just try and sit up and look around. And it was almost, that was my strategy for not spiking the power as well. So it's just like, right, when you get onto the hills, sit up, keep the power down. And actually, it was one of Andy's tips, you know, hit the lap button at the bottom of the hill, and so you see where your power is for that hill, so you're not kidding yourself that yeah, you're staying under your power cap, because you've got a 3-hour average that's got you at a certain level, and you're not going to shift that over a 10-minute hill. But actually just having that lap, hit the lap, and then just make sure you don't spike the numbers on the hill, and just sort of sit up and look around a bit. And because it's so easy, I find, to hit the power on the hills. It's hopefully that sort of paid dividends when it came to the run.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I think the thing you said earlier, it's like when you have a plan, I mean, it sounds really obvious, doesn't it? Having a plan that you can then stick to or not stick to is so much better than just going out and riding and sort of see what happens, both in terms of power and pace, in terms of the nutrition, hydration, electrolytes. When you know what you're doing and you've got a plan to either stick to or then decide to make changes for whatever reason, I think it makes so much difference. And it amazes me that more people don't do it almost. You know, it's such a big part of your day when you've already got, you know, as you've said, a year's worth of training in your legs. That's the thing that's going to mess you up, isn't it, if you don't get it right?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's exactly that. You know, you put 9 months of training, whatever, into it. So, you know, there is a controllable there. And if you're not controlling it, I've put in enough of the training, and I sort of imposed upon family time and stuff enough for me not to control that element of it to my best of my ability, would sort of feel like I'm sort of selling the whole process short. So
totally. And really, it's as much as I'm a big fan of people having loads of fun on race day and really enjoying the experience, the key part of it is, I think, like you said, people are selling themselves short if they've done all this hard work and then kind of at the last minute go, well, I just want to go out and enjoy myself and not really worry about power and not really worry about nutrition and drinks and just kind of que sera, it'll all be fine. Yeah. I'm so glad you had the experience that you did, where you took care of those details, and then it just becomes a procession of almost like just deliver the plan on race day. Mm. And lo and behold, you get a good result from it.
Yeah. I mean, I think controlling those bits allows you to enjoy it in it. You know,
yes.
I think I'd be, you know, if you haven't got those bits dialed in, then it's going to get a bit messy later on, probably, in the race. But
yeah, but it makes it harder to enjoy the
just relax a bit more. Yeah, just sort of knowing that, you know, hopefully that bit's covered off.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. So you zoomed into T2 then, and you said you were pretty surprised to feel physically pretty decent getting off the bike.
Yeah, I was so flipping cold. I just wanted to go for a run at that point. It wasn't that I was uncomfortable coming off the bike. It was just I was cold and needed something to warm up. But no, it felt really never felt as good as I did coming off the bike. Into T2, I had arm warmers and I had calf guards on, and I was like, no, I'm still too cold, I'm not taking those off yet. So just got the trainers on and set off out of T2, and I was actually running alongside another guy, Scott, who was second in the age group in the end, and sort of never met before, just purely by coincidence. So we just sort of set off running. I think we set off running like sort of 420, 430K. So it was sort of up on plan, but you know, it wasn't too fast because it's a little bit downhill for a bit and stuff. And sort of just turning the legs over the first K or so, I was sort of reasonably happy, and sort of having a bit of a chat about the bike and that sort of thing. And yeah, when you've all you've done for the last 5 odd hours is have your own little conversations in your head, it's quite nice to talk to someone real.
Yeah. And so, did you know where you were in your age group at that point? Had you any idea? No,
not at all. No, I knew a couple of guys had gone past me on the bike, and I don't know if I went past anyone on the bike or not. It gets quite messy with the second and third laps on that with the number of people on the course and stuff. So I didn't really know, but as we were coming down through town, some of Scott's family were there and told, "Are you first in age group?" to Scott. And it was like, "Oh, cool." And it was like, "Oh, what age group are you?" It was like, 40-44. It's, 40-44. So we're like, "Oh, cool." Well, it's sort of like, and I think at that point, I certainly didn't have a sort of a racing mentality on at that point, because I just knew that, you know, I've got another 30K to deal with before I even think about trying to race this, you know, and again, just stick to the plan, because if I deviate from that, then things are probably going to go a bit wrong. So but it was cool, it was nice. I said to him, we were sort of tapping along quite nicely, and I got to sort of eight, nine minutes, whatever. So I said, "Oh, sorry about this, I'm probably gonna be a bit of an irritation for the rest of this run, because I'm going to be doing 9-1, and so you'll see me pop up on your shoulder, and then I'm just going to start walking again." And he's like, "Oh yeah, no worries." So I dropped off, did my 1 minute walk, and felt good, and got back into it, popped back onto his shoulder after a few minutes, and then walked again. And then after about a couple of those, I think I went past him, and then probably didn't, the walks weren't cancelling it out. And then I sort of, there's a few out and back sections, so I could see him still sort of there or thereabouts. And never sort of thought, because you never know when people are going to sort of pick it up or I never thought, "Oh, this is it, if I'm an age group win in the bag or anything like that." I just got to keep doing my own race, and if there's something left to do, like 10K out, then maybe we'll have a think about it then. But until then, just crack on with doing what you train to do. And that was the 9-1 that's something I've always done, but never in such a structured way. So I've always run, walk, I've always thought worked for me, and always done that. But never in such a structured way, and that was just key to keeping going. And then the hill coming up through the park is quite good going, and
horrendous, isn't it? It's really steep in that park. No one realizes quite how steep it is, do they?
Yeah, so Scott and I ran it on the first lap, and then I think I sort of said to myself, "Well, that's the last time I run that hill," surely. And that was, so regardless of where I was in the 9-1 cycle, like, I've just power walked that hill, and invariably I was going only, you know, a touch slower than guys running it, or a good few places probably faster walking than so.
Yeah,
and I just, as you know, as your calves tighten up and everything, and the thought of trying to get up on your toes on that, I think probably would have just popped a calf if I'd even tried. So just stuck to that basically the whole run. I know the sort of the 9-1 strategy tends to sort of flick across to run for the last 10K, but I kind of felt like all the e-pace running that we've been doing over the year and stuff had given me a really good feel for what sort of the perceived effort side of things. And I just kind of knew that I was on the limit at that point, and 9-1 was working, so I'll just stick to it. So I just basically did that all the way in.
Nice. And that's a really good example of I almost only say, look, if you get to the 10K to point, 10K to go point and feel good, fine, race it in. It's almost like Dumbo's feather, because people then will do 9-1 to that point, and then very, very rarely do people get to run that last 10K hard. But if it's what's got them there in relatively decent shape, you've just got to fall apart less than the guys around you.
I mean, it's and the course gets quite busy at that point, which is that's quite good. You sort of hook on to a few of the guys coming through, maybe relay runners on that sort of thing, and sort of try and pace off a few of those guys.
Were you surprised? I was going to say, were you surprised running alongside someone who wasn't doing a walk break? Were you surprised by how quickly you got back onto Scott's shoulder after the walk break was over? Because it's very hard, isn't it, to let go of that, "Oh, we're running side by side and now I'm going to have a walk."
No, definitely. And I love that first, when you've done the 9-1, you've done your 1 minute walk, and then you pop back into a run. It's just like, I mean, for me, I guess, you know, everyone's sort of work out what works for them, but I just feel so bizarrely sort of fresh for that first few minutes. I haven't looked at the pace or anything, but yeah, I'd be interested to know what the swing in pace is for those first few minutes. But I definitely feel fresh, and then yeah, probably dragging a little bit coming towards the end of that 9 minute interval. But yeah, no, you absolutely yeah, sort of straight back up, and like I say, it must be bloody annoying for the person you keep popping back up and say it's like actually that Harry Enfield sketch, you know, the guy on the jockey. It's like, oh, back again.
Do you know, I had exactly the same experience the first Ironman I did it in, that, you know, my coach was getting me to do. And as we set off on this run, I was running alongside somebody. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm not going to want to do this walk. This is it. And I said to the guy I was running alongside, well, yeah, I've got to do this walk break. That's the last you're going to see of me unless you fancy a walk. And he kind of looked at me like I was mental, like, yeah, okay, enjoy your walk. And no, I'm not going to walk with you because we're racing each other. And so I could see him maybe like, oh, he's only 40 or 50 meters ahead of me at the end of this walk break. And it was almost like there was something to draw me back to, you know. I got back to him after three or 4 minutes of running and then settled in at his pace again and thought, I really feel like I had to try too hard to get back to him. And like your experience was, sure enough, two or three sets of 10 minutes in and he was behind me and I never saw him again. And I thought, huh, because I'm sure I'd be running at his pace still if... Yeah, it was a real sort of you have to see it to believe it kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think even down to middle distance as well, you know, being able to put maybe amend it a little bit, and maybe it's more about the, you know, the aid station. So if you wanted to get a drink in or something, then it's more like a 15, 30 second power walk.
Yeah.
Anything more, but definitely, yeah, I'm sure it's got benefits and spiky things like short sharp hills where a power walk is versus when you're trying to get that sort of trying to run and all you're doing is basically bouncing up and down on the spot, you know, I might as well just power walk this out and sort of definitely make better progress and save things for a little bit later in the day.
So what point in the run then did you get to, or did you get to the point where you knew the win was in the bag? Did that settle in at any point? Or it's hard to know, isn't it, with all the people around you, I guess?
Yeah, I kind of, because I mean, I could see Scott on the out and back bits, and so I sort of knew I had a bit of a cushion coming into the last lap. And but to be honest, at that point, it's just like, again, it's a little bit sort of internalized things. It's like, well, you still got to get yourself to the finish line, regardless of what anyone else is doing. And I was right on the limit, you know, in terms of the pace I was running. And strangely, I got to a point where I probably couldn't have run any slower, but at the same time, I definitely wouldn't have run any faster. I was just locked in on a pace and just had to, just sort of try and finish it off, get that last little scrunchy wristband and get to the end.
And then you get down into Bolton Centre, you've got that last little sort of, I don't know what they describe it as, it's like a final finishing arena, isn't it, almost, in front of the town hall.
I had that bit down through town was quite twisty turning, and actually I quite liked the out and back section on the road that was a bit flatter and you could hit your pace a bit better. So yeah, the twisty burny bit in town was great. I mean, the support was again amazing, even though it was, you know, tipping down the rain at times, and it was just pretty miserable, and there was still loads of folk out, and it was really good. And then just sort of spun around into the finishing chute, and it was almost sort of a sense of relief that you know, sort of finished it off, and sort of finished it off as I hoped I would have done, and you know, the age group win was a massive bonus, but it was never the real number one focus of the day. So yeah, at that point I just wanted to sit down, but because of the whole sort of COVID secure piece to it, we basically sort of got fired through the finish and spat out into the shopping centre, and so I sort of slumped down with this bag of cold pizza and a alcohol-free beer, and just sort of at that point it's like, oh, okay, now I can relax. This is and just sort of flopped down and chilled out for half an hour or so. Dropped a bottle of water. I had to ask one of the marshals to pick it up for me because there was no way I was bending down.
Oh, bless you.
But yeah, Yeah, the rain had stopped by that point, and it was a bit of a shame there wasn't the normal sort of post Iron Man big feed tent, and you can sort of catch up with folk and have a chat and sort of see how everyone's races went and stuff. But understand the situation, they did a flipping good job of it in under the circumstances.
Yeah, it's a real tough one, isn't it? That there's an undeniable element. It's great that the race happens, but it's then the shame that kind of, okay, off you go, finish now, go on, COVID, off you go.
it was you didn't really get that's oh no I didn't I had to get home that anyway, so I had to jump in the van and head back at that point. But yeah, you didn't get that sort of massive sort of post-race sort of party feel that I think other places may have had, and how much of that was sort of COVID and the stuff, I'm not sure. But I had a chat to a few guys and sort of had a catch up with folk, and so it was nice to do that. And then grabbed the bike and jumped in the van, and thankfully I'd done a good few Morton caffeine gels along the way, so I was well and truly wired for the drive home.
How long was the drive straight post-race?
4 hours, I think.
Epic.
So, yeah, and it hammered down the whole way.
Awful, wasn't it, the weather? Yeah.
Yeah, it was absolutely smashed it down. So, then sort of got home and just sort of turned the engine off. I was like, right, where do we go from here? So how am I actually going to get myself out of this? But so I sort of fell out and it was a shame. Couldn't sort of hang around for the day after. And again, you don't get the sort of the whole COVID thing. You didn't get the sort of the award ceremony or anything like that. But it was just through the whole thing, it was just great to be back out and doing racing and especially with Ironman Wales having been cancelled now, it kind of highlights what a good job those guys. I mean, some of the conversations that must have been had with the council and the organisers and stuff. Must have been.
But that's it. We've got to count our blessings, I think, for every race that does go ahead this year. I think there was a temptation earlier this year to go, well, things will be back to normal this summer and it'll all be fine. And then what we're realising is, things are pretty much coming down to the wire for every race on the horizon, and everyone that happens is a real bonus.
Massively. And and sort of too philosophical about things, it's just a bit of a just lucky that we are healthy enough to race. And I know you've your experience with COVID and stuff, and it's been sort of good to hear about that, and it does make you realize how lucky you are.
Right, let's talk about the scores on the doors then. 103 swim, 456 bike, and 321 on the run. Like, those times are scorching fast, and they don't sound it because of the nature of the Bolton course, right? People will go 5:46. I'm sure there's hundreds of thousands of people around the world in the male 40 age group going, I'm going to go to Bolton next year and go sub 5 hours. But the times don't tell the story, do they? The thing I'm most proud of you for, man, is that 3:21 on that Bolton course, where there's barely a section of flat road. And those that are there, you're going around a 90 degree corner in one direction or the other. How does that compare to your e-pace, out of interest?
My e-pace drifted down actually, as I was getting fitter and getting more comfortable with it. My e-pace was ended up at around, I think it was about 5 minute Ks, somewhere 5 to 5:10, something like that. And I don't know what the run would have been like 4:40s or something like that, I guess. But
I think so you managed to pull the magic out of the bag on race day and lift it slightly above e-pace.
Yeah, which is again one of the things sort of trusting in the plan and stuff. Is when I sort of first joined up, I was sort of looking at it and going, I don't get this. How can you run well off doing all these miles at e-pace? And actually, I didn't do a single 10K test because run injuries have been my issue for the last few years, and I kind of felt like I knew where I was with the e-pace, and I felt like I was getting the right sort of perceived effort with it. So I wasn't going to go and risk running a hard 10K when I'd done no real speed training or anything. So I thought I was I was happy I was in the right zone and just sort of stuck with it. And it, yeah, 100%, it worked well. And sort of not least for the, not just the endurance, but also just the feel, which came with it.
It sounds like you were really in tune with your body and you really had that sense of, you dial into what the effort of e-pace is, and then you can kind of see the pace getting gradually, almost imperceptibly, but gradually faster by a few seconds a K over a few weeks. But the effort stays the same and the heart rate stays the same.
Yeah, I think it just gives you a real flexibility, I think, of range around being able to run that little bit faster when you need to. Whereas if maybe you do those more spiky stuff, I mean, for me, the spiky stuff's guaranteed to get me injured, so I'd sort of steer away from that. But I don't know if you maybe develop a slightly narrower range on that stuff, and the e-pace sort of gives you a much better base and flexibility around that point. It felt good through training, and then I think with a bit of taper and stuff, it sort of freshened me up and came through well on race day.
How did the race compare to other ones you've done? You've said you've done Roth. How did it compare in terms of like feel and results? Obviously, times are hard to compare across events.
I think I was a lot more in tune with my perceived effort. The other ones I've done, I've properly pretty much collapsed over the finish line. Like at Nice, I ended up in the med tent for a while and properly nuked myself on that one. And similarly, Wales a few years ago, I remember just being completely out of it for a few hours afterwards. This one, I was a lot more compass coming out the back of it. But I don't think I could have gone any. Maybe you never say never. Maybe could have pushed a little bit more. But I felt like I was a lot more tuned into perceived effort and where my limits were. Just probably enjoyed it a bit more as a result. Apart from the second half of the bike, which I definitely didn't enjoy. So I was shivering and trying to avoid potholes filled with water.
Now there's obviously a bit of a bittersweet ending to this, in the sense that you win the age group, obviously it's guaranteed Kona slot, but given obviously everything that's happening with the pandemic and travel and stuff, you chose to let the Kona slot roll past you. Is that something you've got an eye on doing something in the future? Would you go back, hopefully when, in inverted commas, the world has returned back to usual? Has that been a big goal of yours, to go to Kona?
Not really, to be honest, which is probably, it's probably something most people would sort of be a bit surprised about. But no, it doesn't really. I think it's the timing of it as well. If I went to Hawaii, I'd have to make it a family holiday and can't take the kids out of school I had to make it a 2-3 week trip to make it worthwhile. Yeah. I think take the kids out of school for 3 weeks doesn't really sort of stack up. And the cost, I kind of look at it and think, actually, for the cost of going to Hawaii with a family, I could probably do another three different time. I'd love to go down to South Africa and do the race down there. I'd love to do Lanzarote. So there's probably, for the sake of that would be, there's a good few more I'd like to do. Maybe when I get, 50, 55 or something like that, or 50, 54, and the kids are away. And
when the kids can use a tin opener.
Exactly. Then maybe make the trip. But not at the moment. Just keep racing with, keep racing locally, or if I do a family trip, do it one that we can sort of all enjoy it.
Yeah. Nice. And what's last thing? What's next on the horizon for you? What have you got lined up for the rest of the season?
Nothing booked in, actually. I just sort of taking the last 3 weeks off and done that. So I rode to the pub a couple of times, so that's about as much as I've touched a bike, and certainly haven't done any running and or anything. But I don't really know. I know I've got Bowood in the plan as something to work towards. I'm definitely gonna kick into the training in that next, well, so I think probably a build week next week, so build back into things and then sort of really kick into that plan in a couple of weeks time. It's the nice thing about when a race goes well is it almost takes a bit of the pressure off it, and I feel like I don't need to do another race to justify the training again. So I sort of do if I can get a bit of fitness back and I can, and the race is still open in a few weeks time, then yeah, give it a whirl. But nothing.
You've enjoyed some downtime, it sounds like, mate, after a long period of focus, and that's so important, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I need to sort of restock the domestic brownie points. Are running pretty low, so I definitely owe the family a lot of time, and it's nice to be doing training, but training to the point where you can put family first and not feel like you're chucking away 9 months of training if you don't go and do that big long ride or whatever it may be. So
trying to
rebalance things, I think, is probably the aim of the game for the next few weeks.
Good man. All right, Tom, listen, thanks very much for your time, mate. It's been great to hear your story, and, you know, really well done on both a great performance but also a really great process that you've put together. It sounds like you actually managed to enjoy the whole thing, the training and the race day itself, and that's great to see.
Yeah. Oh, cheers. Well, thank you very much for the plan and everything we've done over this last year. It's been a massive learning process for me, everything from the e-pace stuff to, you know, to working, getting set up with Matt Bottrell and, you know, all the resource that we've got to plan these races out and hopefully put them together. And also for the rest of the team, you know, reading people's race reports on a Monday morning is always sort of inspirational, and it sort of gives you the kick you need often just to get back on the bike or whatever it may be that you need to be doing. So thanks
awesome.
to you and Andy.
Well, thanks a lot, man. We'll hopefully speak to you again, who knows, in another year. Maybe we'll hear stories from Lanzarote or South Africa or somewhere, hey?
Yeah, fingers crossed. Definitely. Cheers, Bob.
So there you have it, right from the horse's mouth. That's what it feels like. That's what the process feels like to win your age group at Ironman UK. So congratulations to Tom. I think we all know how hard you must have trained in order to get to this position. But it's not just the training that goes into this that makes the difference, as we've heard. I think Tom had a really fantastic and quite unique mindset approach to this, which was really, he had all the training done. He had his plan laid out in front of him. He just went out and delivered his plan, and that gave him the confidence to actually enjoy the day when he was out there and really deliver certainly his best performance to date. So yeah, congratulations, Tom. I'm really proud of you. If you'd like to find out more about training and coaching with Team Oxygen Addict, and perhaps you've got aspirations yourself of winning an age group for next year, we'd love to talk to you. I think we've got the most comprehensive triathlon coaching program out there for busy age groupers. As well as getting your personalized training plan set up for you, your life and your event, we've also partnered with Performance Chef, so our athletes get ready-made meal plans to go alongside the training plans. Partnered with Matt Bottrell Bike Fitting, so we get position and aerodynamics advice from Matt and his team. Partnered with Precision Hydration, offering personalized hydration calls and fueling calls, so you know exactly how much electrolytes, fluid and calories you need. We've also partnered with HRV for Training, so you get heart rate variability guidance, so your plan changes on a day-by-day basis, guided by how well your body's recovered from the training the day before. If your body isn't ready to absorb hard and intense training that day, then we don't do it. We've got guidelines in there for how to change that day's session, so you're always training optimally. So there's no waste of training time. Finally, we've partnered with Yoga 15, who provide fantastic 15-minute yoga videos specifically aimed at triathletes to improve your functional strength and flexibility. If you want to talk through whether you'd be a good fit for coaching, you can just give me a bell. You can set up a call via the link in the show notes, and we can talk through how we can best support you and your triathlon aspirations. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. Here's some discount deals and codes for you. You can use the code OXYGENETIC15 for 15% off your first electrolyte order over at precisionhydration.com. And if you're interested in triathlon coaching, if you get yourself an annual membership, we're going to extend it all the way to the end of September 2022 from this point on. So a couple of extra months of coaching for free added in there. So train with us all the way through the rest of this summer and then all the way through the winter to get super fit, ready for your assault on the events in 2022. There's links in the show notes for all those sponsors, so you don't have to remember them. Until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. See ya.